Greetings once again to you from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you with us again for another week. And I'm looking through the glass here in the Weekly Worldview studios, and I'm making note of the unfortunate absence of my extremely attractive audio engineer. And it's a bit disheartening. Makes it kind of hard to go on with the show because my baby's gone. My baby and all my babies have gone off to Okinawa to visit my wife's family to introduce them to Alexis, the latest addition. And I'm certain she'll be a big hit over there. But this is the broadcast, and we must go forward. This is the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. And I just miss my baby. I just miss my baby. But I will go on. I will go on. I have an awful lot of stuff here. I want to start in the justice file from Worcester, Massachusetts, from the CBS News, the local affiliate there. One Antonio Judd of Worcester grabbed a hot dog from another man in Elm Park back in August after pulling what appeared to be a gun on him. Well, it turns out it was a pellet gun, and Judd then began to devour the hot dog, spilling mustard all over his shirt. Now, he pled guilty this past week there in Worcester to charges including larceny from a person. Records show that one Mr. Antonio Judd has a long criminal history, and he was sentenced to 18 months in jail for stealing a hot dog. 18 months for a hot dog. Now, Mr. Judd... Now, he says he has a long criminal history. He's been to prison three times for several offenses, according to CBS, including assault and vandalism. And what for want of a hot dog, he ends up in jail for 18 months. One good caning early on in this gentleman's career could have avoided this entire problem. But now here he sits in the Worcester Central District Jail for 18 months for stealing a hot dog. And it brings to mind one of the strangest stories recorded in the Bible, the story of Jacob and Esau. Do you guys remember this one? Now, I'm not going to give a warning because I don't have time to read the whole story, but go and read Genesis chapter 27. It's the story of Jacob stealing Esau's birthright and his blessing because Esau wanted a bowl of chili or something like that. And it's one of the strangest stories recorded in the Bible, because Jacob and his mother conspire and lie to their father in order to steal the blessing of Esau, who was the firstborn. And for years, I wondered, why is this story in the Bible? This is just a very strange story. It seems to be recorded approvingly in the scriptures. Well, if you want to crack the code, if you want to understand that story, go to kgov.com, kgov.com, and order the Genesis album. It's an audio album that teaching through the book of Genesis. And Pastor Bob Enyart will explain why this story is in the Bible. And it turns out it's pretty compelling. It's pretty compelling. You can click over there. There's a link on the Weekly Worldview. Go check it out. The Genesis album. And find out why it is this story is recorded so favorably in the scriptures. It will definitely be of interest to you. But anyway, back to one Antonio Judd of Worcester. Well, he needed a caning. What more can we say? Now, let's go on to from the domestic tranquility file. I'm sure you all saw the story of the young man beaten to death on the streets of Chicago while Barry Ho was off in Copenhagen trying to finagle the Olympics over to Chicago. Well, while Obama was away, the Chicago kids did play, and a young man was beaten to death, apparently with wooden planks or parts of railroad ties. People filmed it with their telephone cameras, and the video footage, which was horrifying, it went all over the world via the internet. A reporter asked Barry Ho's press secretary if they had a comment on it, and Gibbs, who's the apparently B.O.'s, Barry Ho's mouthpiece, he said, this is something the administration's been working on. He says, this is not just a Chicago-specific problem. Obviously, youth crime and gang violence are something that this administration takes seriously. The young man beaten to death with wooden planks in front of the whole world. The French press agency tells us it was not clear if internet footage of the incident in Chicago would have any impact on IOC members dictating the fate of Chicago's bid for the Olympics. But apparently it did, or something did. It was either this, the fear of violence and bloodshed, the fear of athletes being beaten to death in the streets by wild Chicago youth gang members, or maybe it was because Obama couldn't get Blagojevich to go over there. I mean, Barry Ho needed a fella who knew how to throw around the bribes. And Blagojevich obviously was not available, and that may have cost Chicago the Olympics. But I really think that it was this video and the undeniable truth that Chicago is just out of control as far as violence and bloodshed. And Barry Ho and his M.O., well, they just couldn't put a positive face on that. There was just really no way. And so there you have it. The violence in the streets taking precedence over Barry Ho and his M.O. dressing up in their finest and attempting as best they could to bribe the IOC. Now, into the war file. New York's Empire State Building was lit up red and yellow to honor the 60th anniversary of Communist China. The Communist Party has been in continuous power longer than any other government in the world. I hadn't thought of that. But isn't it strange that we've come to a place where we light up one of America's great iconic buildings in honor of a despotic, murderous communist regime? Doesn't this strike anyone as odd? I asked a friend of mine to get his take on this, hey, we're lighting up the Empire State Building in honor of the Chinese. And he said to me, well, isn't it owned by the Chinese? And I said, well, I'm not sure. It very well may be. If it's not owned now by the Chinese, it very well may be owned in the not-too-distant future. So I guess we can get used to more of that. It's really, really sad. Now, I've got a story that's related from the London Daily Mail earlier last week. The headline is Marching Toward World Domination, Why the West Should Be Worried About China. And the author, he says, what we often forget about China is that it's not an ordinary nation state like any others. It's a rigid, highly militarized, and intensely nationalistic empire in which 1.2 billion Han Chinese dominate dozens of other ethnic groups by force if necessary. China currently, listen to this, has territorial disputes with Japan, both Koreas, Bhutan, the Philippines, and Vietnam, as well as one of the world's most enduring and most dangerous border disputes with India, which could easily bring two nuclear powers to the brink of war. But they really make great knickknacks and gadgets and shoes and clothes. And so aren't they our friends? I mean, they buy all that debt from us. It must be because they're friendly. Meanwhile, the reporter from the London Daily Telegraph tells us, meanwhile, China itself is well on the way to becoming one of the world's dominant military powers. Already, its standing army alone has more than 2.25 million men. And for the past 20 years, the Chinese have been modernizing at a staggering rate, plowing the fruits of their industrial revolution, not into welfare programs, health care, or environmental protection, but into guns, and more guns. It is no accident that the centerpiece of the 60th anniversary celebrations in Beijing, we all saw clips on television. The centerpiece was a massive military parade. Did you guys catch that? Yeah, it wasn't a Celebrate America party. It was a massive military parade demonstrating their military might. Now, the author tells us, of course, China's long march to world domination is by no means inevitable. As academic experts point out, their current economic miracle is built on distinctly shaky political and environmental foundations. History suggests that any society modernizing at such a breakneck pace, with millions of peasants flooding from the countryside into the cities, often into low-paid jobs and jerry-built apartments, is bound to suffer enormous social and economic tensions. And see, that's where the Christians come in, I believe. We have an opportunity to either Christianize China, or we will be swallowed by China. I really believe that in this century. And it's the Christians who are smuggling Bibles into China and teaching people the gospel that are standing in the gap that separates us from the barbarians. And we have to pray our blessing upon those brothers and sisters who are over there taking the risk to teach the Chinese people about Jesus Christ. Because the Chinese people historically have been a very religious people. Albeit pagan religions, they're a very religious people. And our only hope for China, well, China's only hope, I should say, is the same as any other nation's hope. It's Jesus Christ and the gospel of Jesus Christ. And if that gospel does not penetrate China, my fear is that the globe will be dominated in the next century by a largely pagan empire. And there's nowhere to go from here, folks. America's it. We're the last Christian outpost left, and we're not in such great shape spiritually. And so, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. And now that we've lost the moral high ground, we've sacrificed the moral high ground. Well, China will be ready to fill that vacuum. And let's hope they could fill it as a Christian nation. That would be really exciting if that could happen, because otherwise it's pretty scary to think about what could happen over there. Now, into the war file. That was from the war file, huh? The Chinese? Well, I suppose that was a preemptive filing into the war file for the Chinese story. From the New York Times, senior staff members of the United Nations Nuclear Agency says Iran has acquired sufficient information to be able to design and produce a workable atom bomb. The report stresses in its introduction that its conclusions are tentative and subject to further confirmation. I suppose when Iran actually explodes a nuclear device, that'll be confirmation for the IAEA. American intelligence agencies published the report, concluding that Tehran halted its efforts. Oh, you remember American intelligence. You remember in 2003, our intelligence experts, you know, the ones who didn't realize India had a bomb until after it went off. Well, those geniuses, they issued a report concluding that Tehran had halted efforts to design a nuclear weapon back in 2003. But Britain now has joined France, Germany, and Israel in disputing that conclusion. Yeah. This new atomic agency's report says it does not know how far the work has progressed on Iran's bomb. Departing director Mohammed El-Baradei was quoted as saying when he was in India last week, he said a major question about the authenticity of the evidence kept his agency from making any judgment at all on whether Iran had ever sought to design a nuclear warhead. And apparently now we're going to inspect Iran's new facility there sometime around the end of October. That's if they don't explode a nuclear device first and become a nuclear power. And I don't want to make a prediction, but I have a fear in the pit of my stomach that if someone doesn't do something by Christmas, Iran will join the club of nuclear nations by Christmas. And that's pretty scary. Don't you find that pretty scary? Why are we waiting? Why are the Jews waiting? I mean, maybe I'm missing something. I guess I'm not a diplomat by any means, nor am I an intelligence expert. But it seems to me Iran has been working pretty hard. Well, listen to this from Washington, from the New York Times. The Israelis, who have delivered veiled threats of a military strike, say they believe that Iran has restarted the weaponization effort of their enriched uranium, which would mark a final step to building a nuclear weapon. Meanwhile, American spy agencies have stood firm in their conclusion that Iran may ultimately want a bomb. They halted their work on weapons design back in 2003 and probably have not restarted the effort, probably being the key word there. And again, I mean, how much more? How much longer can we wait? I got some news from Ahmadinejad. Yeah, Ahmadinejad. You remember him. The Israel must be wiped off the map guy. The guy who says we only want the uranium for peaceful nuclear energy. Well, it turns out, from a WorldNet Daily article, Ahmadinejad's original family name prior to their conversion to Islam was Saburjian, a Jewish name. A Jewish name? Could Mahmoud Ahmadinejad be Jewish? Well, I suppose it's possible. Now, a gentleman named Ali Nurizada of the Center for Arab and Iranian Studies, he says this aspect of Mr. Ahmadinejad's background explains a lot about him. Every family that converts into a different religion takes a new identity by condemning their old faith. And the question is, will Mahmoud Ahmadinejad take that to its most horrifying conclusion? Not just condemning their old faith, but will he wipe it out? And it is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And I wonder if sitting around the headquarters here of the Weekly Worldview, while my extremely attractive audio engineer is absent and the children, I wonder if I'm sitting around spending too much time worrying about the next world war. Maybe I've just got too much time on my hands. Maybe I'm paranoid, but it's only because everyone's out to get me. From CNN, okay? We'll see how paranoid I am. From CNN, the would-be assassin of Saudi Arabia's Prince Mohammed bin Nayef, head of the Saudi Arabian counterterrorism effort, the assassin hid his bomb in his underwear, apparently believing that cultural taboos would prevent a search in that part of his body. Well, the prince there in Saudi Arabia, he was slightly injured in the explosion. The Saudis said they think the bomb weighed about 100 grams and was made with plastic explosives to avoid detection by metal detectors. The Saudis are exploring the possibility that the prince's assailant exploded the device using a detonator that used a chemical fuse, which would not be detected by a metal detector. That's kind of scary, especially in light of all of the terror warnings that have gone out here in the past 10 days, telling us to be on the lookout, be alert, and we find out that the FBI is currently monitoring a number of terrorists who hung out with Najibullah Zazi, the bus driver out at DIA, who we find out is a terrorist. Allegedly. What bothers me about that is I read an article about the London bombings, and apparently British officials were monitoring the men who carried out the London train bombs. Yeah, they were monitoring them. So I just hope that the guys monitoring Najibullah's friends, I hope they know what they're doing, you know, because I would hate to see fellows under surveillance actually carry out an attack. And, you know, maybe these terrorists are like cockroaches, you know. You find one or two of them in the light, and all that tells you is you've got a real problem in the darker areas. And you need to uncover them and then exterminate them. Well, I just hope those guys know what they're doing. And I hope that the Barry Ho administration doesn't get so obsessed with healthcare and his personal image and Michelle's hideous choices in apparel so that they lose sight of the goal of preventing terrorist attacks here in the United States. Well, and listen to this from the war file. This is very disconcerting. From Kabul, the Reuters wire, an Afghan soldier on guard at a joint base with U.S. troops shot dead two American service members and wounded two others as they slept. The Americans were sleeping when an Afghan soldier on duty opened fire on them. So here we are over in Afghanistan trying to build a secular democracy, which is a ridiculous goal. Now, the first goal of wiping out the Taliban and killing as many radical Muslim fundamentalist terrorists as we can, that's a good goal. But this idea of creating a secular democracy in Afghanistan is just ridiculous. And as we're nation building over there, one of the keys is to develop a trust between our people and the people that we're trying to allegedly help by building them a secular democracy. And this incident would indicate that that's not going very well. This one incident is probably more effective, a more effective tactic by our enemy than any of the previous efforts that they've made as far as direct military conflict with the United States, because this tears at the heart of what's necessary for our success in Afghanistan, and that's trust. And this one incident now has devastated the level of trust between American troops and the Afghan National Army that they are trying to raise up for some ambiguous reason. I think it's to defend the secular democracy that we intend to create over there. Just terrible. And I don't think that ends well. I do not think that ends well. Now, let's do a little domestic politics, but it's from the war file. An article from Byron York, he says, so far this month, 38 American troops have been killed in Afghanistan. For 2009, the number's at 220, more than any other single year, and more than died in 2001, 2, 3, and 4 combined. Now, I remember when we went into Afghanistan, I thought this was going to be a pretty long slog, because those Afghans are relatively famous as fighters. And while the United States military could and should dominate and destroy and kill Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, I'm afraid that the way we're going about it is probably not going to produce the outcome that we all desire. Now, Byron tells us that 220 troops have died. The number of arrivals at Dover Air Base, that's where they bring the caskets, is increasing, but the journalists who once clamored to show the true human cost of war are nowhere to be found. Where did all the journalists go? You remember? You remember the journalists who demanded that George Bush show them the caskets? Well, when the casket-bearing Air Force Tech Sergeant Philip Myers of Hopewell, Virginia, arrived at Dover on the night of April 5th, the first arrival in which press coverage was allowed, that's April 5th of 2009, there were representatives of 35 media outlets on hand. The press got their wish. Well, fast forward to last month, September 2nd, when the casket bearing the body of Marine Lance Corporal David Hall of Elyria, Ohio, arrived at Dover, there was just one news outlet, the Associated Press, there to record it. So now that Barry Ho is firmly ensconced, and this is now a Democrat war, The media seems to have lost interest in showing us the true cost of the war. And I was never in favor of that either way. I don't think that the civilian population necessarily needs to see everything that is true in war, because it's hard to keep your stomach up when you see what war really is. And so we need to be insulated from that and let the men who are paid and who have volunteered to fight that war, let them do that dirty, ugly, hideous business of killing and destroying the enemies of liberty, freedom, and Christianity throughout the world. But the news media here in the United States, along with Barry Ho and various other offenders, they have a different agenda altogether. All right. Now, let's. Do I want to dive into the domestic tranquility file? It can be kind of depressing. But I feel that I must. From Tallahassee, Florida, the Associated Press, you remember John Evander Cooey? John Cooey? Yeah, he was the guy who kidnapped a young girl. He took young Jessica Lunsford from her bedroom to his nearby trailer back in February 2005. The third grader's body was found about 3 weeks later in a grave in Cooey's yard. Her body was found under a foot of dirt wrapped in two garbage bags. She had poked holes through the bags with her fingers, indicating that she had been buried alive. This particular incident made my blood boil. Well, Cooey was convicted, but he died just over a month before the Florida Supreme Court was scheduled to hear his automatic appeal. He died of natural causes Wednesday last week. So Cooey had confessed to the crime, but his confession was thrown out because he did not have a liar present. He did not have a lawyer present. So Cooey has died of natural causes, and that's a tragedy. Sheriff Jeffrey Dawsey, who oversaw the investigation, said his first reaction to Cooey's death was one of disappointment. He said, "I really wanted the state of Florida to put John Cooey to death. I wanted to be there to look into his eyes." Sheriff Jeffrey Dawsey. This guy should be the Attorney General of the United States, or perhaps even the President. That's the right attitude. So, see, the system does not work. It is not working when this maniac dies of natural causes. Almost 4 years after brutally murdering this young girl. Now, let's go on in the domestic tranquility file from the Associated Press. Jesse Jackson and Nation of Islam Minister Louis Farrakhan are both calling for an end to youth violence. And they did it at the funeral of the Chicago teen, Darian Albert, who was beaten to death on camera. Farrakhan said he came to the funeral because he was deeply pained. He says this was a special young man of righteous bearing who God took from us so young. Minister Farrakhan, God didn't take him from us. It was a Chicago street gang, one of the many that proliferate the Chicagoland area. It was not God. God did not take him. Anyway, let's see. Do we have any quotes that are... Let's see. Pastor E.F. Ledbetter told mourners at the Greater Mount Hebron Baptist Church on the city's south side, he said, "This has affected people all over the globe. The eyes of the world are watching." Yeah, especially in Copenhagen, apparently. Now, Jesse Jackson, what does Jesse have to say? Jesse Jackson demanded children and teens be given safe passage to and from school. So, Jesse... It's time for Jesse to be put into a home, because you couldn't miss the point wider than Jesse just missed the point that everyone should be taking from this brutal slaying of an apparently innocent young man there in Chicago, beaten to death in broad daylight right there on the street. The point that should be taken, Mr. Jackson, is that the justice system is broken and that we tolerate this sort of violence. And so it grows exponentially day by day, Mr. Jackson. And it's the tolerant attitude of liberals like yourself, Mr. Jackson, that has led to this epidemic of violence. But no, Jackson says teens need safe passage to and from school. Well, I guess now we know what we can do with all those up-armored Humvees that are coming back from Iraq. They can be used to bus children to school there in Chicago. Very nice, Mr. Jackson. All right, from the Domestic Tranquility File, Dateline Atlanta, from the Associated Press, 9 homeless sex offenders directed to live in the woods behind a suburban Atlanta office park have been ordered to move. They had been directed to live in the woods by probation officers who said it was a location of last resort. Because, as I explained a week ago or 2 weeks ago, we now have laws that say sex offenders can't live here, they can't live there, so they end up somewhere east of Eden, out there in the land of Nod, like Cain, with a mark on them. And it's as if the justice system thinks they're God, and they can just mark a man and send him off as a vagabond upon the earth. But the justice system and the people in it are not nearly as smart as God. And God had a specific point to make when he marked Cain. And the point's been made, gentlemen. You know, God came back and said, now anyone who sheds man's blood by man shall his blood be shed. Execute murderers. Execute kidnappers. A sex offender is by definition a kidnapper, and they should be executed. They shouldn't be sent out as vagabonds upon the earth. It's just ridiculous. Can I continue with this Domestic Tranquility File? It's really getting me down. Dateline Forest, Mississippi. A grandmother and an aunt pleaded guilty to starving to death a 4-year-old boy. He weighed only 19 pounds when he was found at his home in central Mississippi. The judge accepted capital murder pleas from the grandmother and the aunt. In exchange for the guilty pleas, the judge sentenced the women to life. Life! How do you get life for killing someone? Does that not seem oxymoronic? Does something seem a little off kilter there? To get life because you inflicted death upon another person? Just doesn't make sense to me. okay, well, I can't do any more from that. Let's see here. Dateline, Centennial, Colorado. That's my town. That's where I live. A Colorado father has been found guilty of fatal child abuse and several other charges in the disappearance and presumed death of his young daughter. Young Erin A. Thompson disappeared. And now the father has been found guilty. Thompson reported his daughter missing back in November of 2005. He said she ran away after an argument, but authorities believe she may have died about 2 years earlier. Her body has not been found. I believe this is a story where the mother was also a suspect, and she died of a heart attack some time ago. What's going on with the hearts of the parents toward their children? What's going on there? Dateline, Oklahoma City. A woman accused of beating her 14-year-old son apparently frequently tied him up and had a lock installed on a bedroom closet where he often was kept for days at a time. Her and a friend named Steve were arrested last week on 20 complaints each of child abuse and child neglect. The teenager apparently spent most of the last 4.5 years locked inside bedroom closets at various apartments where the family lived. Family? This is a family? Some chick and her shack-up boyfriend abusing a child? That does not qualify as a family. I'm sorry. That's some kind of dysfunctional social organization. But I certainly wouldn't call a family. Let's see. The Domestic Tranquility File. I'll tell you. It's getting pretty bad out there, folks. Dateline Salem, Oregon, from the Associated Press. A northwestern Oregon man used a shock collar for dogs on his young children. He's been sentenced to 3 years of supervised probation. He is barred from using corporal punishment now and participating in physical play with the children. Now, here's a fella who needed to be educated about corporal punishment and the proper training and discipline of children. He needed that a long time ago, using a shock collar. But what's a liberal to do? You can't spank him. Let's see. From the Los Angeles Times, police said the shooting that killed a 4-month-old boy and injured two others in Van Nuys was prompted by an argument between rival gang members. The baby, Andrew Garcia, was being fed by a family friend who was holding him inside a parked car. They were caught in a crossfire. The baby's father is, according to police, linked to a criminal street gang. Heartbreak. Dateline Anaheim, California. Police say they've shot and killed a man accused of abducting his 5-year-old son after he allegedly killed the boy's mother and her boyfriend at her home in Southern California. The man had dropped off his son unharmed at the grandparents' home after fleeing with him following the shooting deaths of the boy's mother and a man. Shooting death. I think we used to call that murder. Even if they called it alleged murder, it'd be better than that choice of words, a shooting death. Okay, finally, from the domestic tranquility file, jurors in a Georgia courtroom heard horrific videotape confession from a man who admitted he and his adult son stripped, assaulted, and strangled a 6-year-old boy inside a mobile home as the child pleaded with them to stop. Prosecutors told jurors this deviant, who I won't even give his name, and his son lured the boy into their trailer across the street from the home of the boy's grandmother, then took turns molesting him. Oh, wow. The perpetrator told a detective he heard voices calling his name, and the detective asked, "What voices did you hear?" And he said it was the devil. The cops asked him if the devil told him to do anything to hurt the little boy. He told me, "Yes, the devil told me to kill him." And he did kill him. And that's the domestic tranquility file for this week. I certainly hope that we can recover. All right, now I'll admit that I was getting a bit depressed there trying to make it through the domestic tranquility file. But that song definitely helps me to come back to it. And I think it's because my extremely attractive audio engineer and my baby girls are gone that the domestic tranquility file had a particular impact on me this week. And I apologize for that. I will try to bring the energy level back up. And if possible, I will try to do something entertaining and edifying here in the last half of the broadcast. Let's go to the culture file. I'm not sure why I pulled this story out, but it caught my eye. A golfer down in Texas, 61-year-old William Michael Grant of Garland, Texas, was playing in a golf tournament last Friday at Sherrill Park Golf Course when he overshot a green. Now, as he was trying to get his ball back, witnesses saw him slip and fall about 10 feet. Police say it appears that Grant broke his neck. He was taken by ambulance to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. So here you are, 61 years old, healthy fella, out there playing a game of golf. Boom, the next minute, you're dead. And you're being introduced to your creator. And your judge. Well, let's certainly hope that that Mr. Michael Grant, William Michael Grant of Garland, Texas, don't worry, God will get his name right. William Michael Grant, let's hope he was prepared to meet Jesus Christ at that particular moment. I doubt he planned that morning when he got up. I doubt he planned on that meeting, but it is indeed taking place. And so I forget who said it. Maybe it was Paul, the apostle, who said, "Today is the day of salvation," because none of us are assured that we will see tomorrow. So take heed and take note and be prepared. How do you get prepared? Read the book of Romans. If you just read the book of Romans, you pretty much understand how to prepare for the day when you will meet Jesus Christ quite unexpectedly. All right. Now, into the culture file. Let's come back down to earth now. All new buildings in Los Angeles, including homes, must have anti-graffiti coating under an ordinance approved by the student council there. Yeah. An anti-graffiti coating. This is just ridiculous. An anti-graffiti coating must cover the walls and doors from the ground to a height of at least 9 feet. failure to... Yeah. Let's see here. The coating is mandated on all buildings unless owners sign a covenant and agreement regarding maintenance of building graffiti removal with the Los Angeles Department of Building and Safety. So unless you sign a contract with the student council there that you say you'll clean up your graffiti within, I think it's 3 days, you're going to be in trouble. Failure to abide by that contract could result in a $550 fine. The theory is the graffiti proofing is supposed to make graffiti easy to remove. They want graffiti removed in less than a week. Because apparently the theory is if you leave graffiti up for a week, the graffiti artists are able to show it off to all their friends, and now they're motivated to do more graffiti. And one student council member released a statement, and he said, "Graffiti is best deterred by having a short life." or by flogging. How about that? How about a caning, Mr. Student Council member? How many times you think a tiger would keep going out after you flay the skin off his bottom with a cane in front of God and everybody? Anyway, but because our student councils and governing officials in our justice system are completely confused as to how to reduce petty crimes like this, Los Angeles looks like a war zone. Their street signs are wrapped in concertina wire. And now if you want to build a house out there, you have to coat the thing in plastic up to 9 feet. Now, if you compare the cost of wrapping your house in an impermeable substance, compare that to the cost of a cane, I mean, I'm sure someone would donate the cane to the student council. I'm sure there are people in Los Angeles who would just volunteer to cane these little bastards. But, well, that's the justice system, and it is broken. All right. Now, if you have any faith in party politics, if you're a Democrat or a Republican, I am about to shatter any hopes you have placed in party politics. Newt Gingrich and the Reverend Al Sharpton are on a tour of schools in Philadelphia. Here's the story from the Associated Press. Al Sharpton, a liberal Democrat, and Newt Gingrich, an allegedly conservative Republican, joined Education Secretary Arnie Duncan on the first stop of a listening and learning tour to find out which school strategies are working and why. Yes, Gingrich and Sharpton apparently have found common ground in the concept that education is the new frontier of civil rights. Yeah, I think they missed personhood. How about personhood for all human beings? How about equal rights for all human beings, no matter how small or defenseless they are? Did Gingrich and Sharpton not get the memo on that? That there are a number of states now that are pushing for ballot initiatives for the most important civil rights issue, maybe ever? I guess they missed that memo. But they were probably busy out raising money for their respective parties. So if you have any hope in party politics, I mean, come on, don't be an idiot. I mean, these are two, Sharpton's a big-time Democrat, Gingrich is a big-time Republican, and they've completely missed the point. So there you have it. All right. Let's see here. Barry Ho wants to curtail summer vacation. What is this? A story from Washington from, I got it from Yahoo News. I'm not sure where it comes from. Obama says American kids spend too little time in school. That puts them at a disadvantage with other students around the globe. What does Barry have to say? He says the challenges of a new century demand more time in the classroom. The president wants schools to add time to classes, to stay open late, and to let kids in on weekends so they can have a safe place to go. Okay, so I guess that we'll have to get those up-armored Humvees back here as quick as possible. I don't know where Barry Ho got the idea that American public schools are a safe place to go. He's obviously missed the point as well, but we would expect no less from Barry Ho. In a related article from WorldNet Daily, just 29% of Americans said they think schools are teaching appropriate subjects, while 50% said they believe the public schools are dabbling in politics in the classroom, in which they have no business. Well, they're dabbling in a lot more than politics, ladies and gentlemen. And if you think that's all it is, if you're only worried about Barry Ho trying to brainwash your children into worshiping him, well, you don't even have a clue as to what they're actually teaching your kids in the public schools. Far more dangerous subject matter every day is put before your children in the public schools than just Barry Ho and kumbaya parties. Okay, it's a lot worse than that. Now, according to this survey, 65% of Republicans think the public schools teach improper subjects, while just 15% said they think the subject matter is appropriate. So that just, and by the way, I will make a note here, 90% of Republicans still send their kids to these schools. So this survey simply uncovers how stupid Republicans are. They're generally more stupid than Democrats, apparently. Now, from the international culture file, let's start with Roman Polanski, okay? Because I can't leave that aside. There's been an awful lot this week. I mean, we got Roman Polanski, you got David Letterman, you got Whoopi Goldberg, you got Mackenzie Phillips. It's enough to make you want to throw up. Yeah. So Roman Polanski's been arrested because 30 years ago, he drugged and raped a 13-year-old girl. But Whoopi Goldberg says, well, it wasn't rape. Yeah. So he drugged her after she asked him to have her clothes back and to be taken home. But I suppose that's not rape, I guess, for Whoopi. Anyway, there's a petition that people are signing to free Roman Polanski. Deborah Winger came out with a statement. She says, this is a 3-decade-old case that is dead, but for minor technicalities. I guess that's the drugging and the rape. Those are the minor. And the fact that he fled the country. Let's see. Harvey Weinstein, he says Polanski is a humanist who had been the victim of a miscarriage of justice. Well, I'll agree that Roman Polanski is a fine example of humanism. The London Telegraph article I'm reading from says the views of the Hollywood elite seem to be out of step with those of ordinary Americans. Yeah. Meanwhile, David Letterman, do I have the story on David Letterman? Or should I stick? I can't stick with Polanski. It's disgusting. Now, Mackenzie Phillips, have you seen this? I mean, Mackenzie Phillips, she wrote a book, and to make sure that she sells a lot of books, she admits to, I don't even want to talk about it. Well, I saw her on Larry King, and she was reading quotations from the book, and there's no doubt in my mind that there's no way she wrote what she was reading. There's no way. You could tell by the way she read it. Or she was just really stoned. That's possible, too. She looked as high as a kite. But David Letterman, now let's close with this. It's like the triumvirate of sickness here. Prosecutors have called the man accused of shaking down David Letterman desperate and capable of doing anything. Robert Joe Halderman apparently was trying to blackmail David Letterman, gathered evidence of Letterman's kind of disgusting behavior. Well, not kind of disgusting. It's extremely disgusting. And then told Letterman, if you don't pay me $2 million, you know, I'm going to let this out of the bag public. So anyway, Mr. Halderman, a note to Mr. Halderman. He must not be too bright. But he should have realized that you shouldn't try to blackmail a man who has no shame. You know, instead of forking over the $2 million and being worried about his reputation and his career, Letterman used it as a bit on his show. And where is the outcry from the feminists? Here's a powerful white man oppressing his female staff, forcing them to, well, I mean, it's too disgusting to even mention, but where is the outcry from the feminists? Aren't they outraged that yet another powerful white man is oppressing women who are in a subordinate position? Oh, that's right. Letterman's pro-choice. He can get away with doing whatever he wants to do. Right, see you later, Dave. See you later, Whoopi. See you later, Roman. You know where you're going. Yeah. Where are they going? All right, all right. So we know where they're going. All right, now in a related story, Dateline Warsaw, Poland, from the Reuters Wire. Poland has approved a law making chemical castration mandatory for pedophiles in some cases. Well, I guess you'd call this a step in the right direction, I suppose. Castration mandatory for pedophiles in some cases. Let's see, what are the cases here? Under the law, sponsored by Poland's center-right government, that's what qualifies as center-right over there, eh? Pedophiles convicted of raping children under the age of 15 or a close relative would have to undergo chemical therapy after they are released from prison. Huh. Wow. Well, I support the concept here. Actually, I don't. But, you know, if I were going to do it, or if I were going to support a law like this, I would go for something other than chemical means. Yeah. And only as a prelude to execution. Yeah. So Roman Polanski, by the way, is of Polish descent. And so I thought it was kind of odd that this story came out last week, you know, the same week of the uproar about what we should do with Roman Polanski. Well, this is a good start. So I guess we can give some kudos to the center-right government over there in Poland for at least trying to do something. Instead of, they don't deserve much credit at all. I think a rusty knife as a prelude to execution is the only way that I could support the concepts that were laid out there in that article. All right, from the culture file back here in the United States, Detroit pastors are carrying guns to church. Yeah, Reverend Lawrence Adams over at the Westside Baptist Church. He preaches love, peace, and forgiveness, and he carries a firearm there in church. And the Associated Press writer obviously finds that ironic because he's a complete idiot. But the pastor does a pretty good job of acquitting his position. He says, as a pastor, I'm referred to as a shepherd. And shepherds have the responsibility of watching over their flock. Amen. You preach it, brother. I think that's a sad statement on where we are. That pastors find it necessary to carry firearms into church in order to protect themselves and their parishioners from violence. But according to the AP article, Detroit had the highest homicide rate last year among cities of at least 500,000. And last year in New Jersey, at a church, a man fatally shot his estranged wife and a man who tried to intervene. A pastor was found stabbed to death back in August at an Oklahoma church. In Marysville, Indiana, a preacher was gunned down during his Sunday sermon back in March. In December 2007, a gunman killed two people at a Christian youth mission in Denver and two others at a church in Colorado Springs. Near Detroit, a man was shot to death in 2003 while worshiping in a Catholic church. And an attacker fatally shot a woman and wounded a child inside another Detroit church 3 years ago. Definitely a commentary on the state of society, that there's so much violence going on in our churches. Anyway, but I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment. And more than that, I'm a supporter of the God-given right to self-defense from which the Second Amendment was drawn. And so I encourage all of you men of the cloth, pastors, preachers, men of peace, to carry a piece to church. Let's see here. What's going on in Nevada and Texas? There's a lot of confusion going on here from the Culture File. A Dateline Dallas from the Associated Press. A Texas judge cleared the way for two Dallas men to get a divorce, ruling that Texas' ban on same-sex marriage violates the constitutional guarantee to equal protection under the law. This is just bizarre. Here's a judge challenging Texas' ban on same-sex marriage based on the divorce of two homosexuals. That's pretty confusing. I don't think I want to... Oh, what do the Republicans down in Texas say? Governor Rick Perry, he says, I believe the ruling is flawed and should be appealed. Okay, he's obviously a lawyer. Is Rick Perry a lawyer? Somebody let me know. Sounds like a lawyer. If he's not a lawyer, he's hanging around with too many lawyers. Kay Bailey Hutchinson, who's running against this other Republican, she says she has, quote, consistently voted to preserve the sanctity of marriage, and as governor, I will continue to defend traditional marriage. Meanwhile, Kay, now how long has Kay Bailey Hutchinson been involved in the government? I mean, what, 20 years, 40 years? And all that time, both local, state, and federal government have tolerated rampant infidelity in America and rampant divorce. So she says that she's consistently voted to preserve the sanctity of marriage, but I think that's a lie, Kay. I think you've participated in the wholesale destruction of marriage to the point where marriage is something that even the queers can take over now. Because what is it really worth with all your tolerance of infidelity? Look what you've done, Kay. How dare you call yourself a conservative? Very confusing times down there in Texas. Meanwhile, out in Carson City, Nevada, Nevada Secretary of State issued domestic partnership certificate number one at the state capitol last week as a state law providing many of the same legal rights as marriage to gay and straight partners went into effect. Gay and straight partners, that's kind of weird. So I guess you don't even have to get married in Nevada anymore. Just shack up, you know, whatever you want to do. It's Nevada, for crying out loud. The first couple to be issued the certificate, Lee Cagley and Larry Davis, shared tears and laughter and were congratulated by Secretary of State Ross Miller. That's just wonderful. Larry Davis and Lee Cagley. We'll have to find out how long it'll be before they get divorced. Davis is a funeral home director, oddly enough, for whatever that's worth. All right, now into the politics file as we're rounding third and heading for home. And I understand, ladies and gentlemen, I'm having a difficult time doing the show without my extremely attractive broadcast engineer. But I'm doing my best here. So please bear with me. From WorldNet Daily, a transcript from a 1997 speech shows Office of Safe Schools Chief Kevin Jennings over there at the Department of Education expressed his admiration for Harry Hay, one of the nation's first homosexual activists who launched the Medicine Society, founded the Radical Fairies, and was a longtime advocate for the North American Man-Boy Love Association. Yeah, that's right. And he is now a high official in the Department of Education, which I think is completely appropriate for what the Department of Education is, for what the Barry Ho administration is, and for what's at the heart of what's wrong with this country and this government. This is wholly appropriate. No one should be surprised that a deviant homosexual is now elevated to high authority in the Department of Education. If you are surprised, you haven't been paying attention to what's been going on for the last 50 years in the public schools. If you send your children to public schools, you are sinning against God and you are sinning against your children, and you will be held accountable. See, WorldNet Daily has reported several times on Jennings' homosexual activism. including his founding of the organization Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, which advocates openly for homosexuality in the public schools. So anyone who's surprised by this or shocked or outraged or demanding his removal, before you demand his removal from the Department of Education, facilitate the removal of your kid from the public school. I mean, pick your battles wisely, people. Let's see here. I don't want to do anything about Kennedy. Do I want to talk about this? The liberals are worried that there's going to be violence. There's going to be violence over the health care debate. That's right. Patrick Kennedy has reared his ugly head. What does Patrick Kennedy have to say here? This is a story from Providence, Rhode Island, from the local newspaper there in Providence. Kennedy says he fears that supercharged passions fueling the national health care debate may lead to violence. Oh, I'm scared, Patrick. I'm really scared. Kennedy told the nurses, some nurses and union officials, and some AARP criminals. He was at an invitation-only event in the Providence Marriott Hotel. He's warned that angry opposition could create physical danger for elected leaders. Yeah, that's Patrick Kennedy. Physical danger. He thinks they're in physical danger. Patrick, you're in extreme moral danger. You're in extreme spiritual danger. But please, don't insult us. Because we're against a wholesale communist takeover of our government. And we're speaking out against the likes of you, raping the minds of our children, stealing their money, and telling them you're great. Well, we're not going to come and blow up your house, Pat, okay? We're not going to come and shoot at you, Pat. In fact, I think the only reason Patrick brings this up is because they're losing the debate. And so they want to make us, you know, the people who stand for liberty, Christianity, morality, they want to make us look like crazies. But I'm not buying it. All right, finally, from Euclid, Ohio, from the Associated Press, an Ohio woman accused of beating a baby deer to death with a shovel after finding it in her flower garden has been sentenced to 80 hours of community service. 76-year-old Dorothy Richardson of the Cleveland suburb of Euclid pled no contest to one misdemeanor count of animal abuse and was found guilty. She was ordered to pay a $500 fine, and she was sentenced to 80 hours of community service. She says she became frightened when she saw the fawn in her garden, and she only meant to shoo it away with the shovel. But she's obviously a little stronger than she thought, or she was more scared than she realized. All right, now the only thing I've got to say about this, number one, why is she paying a fine to the government for committing a crime? That just doesn't seem to work for me. Seems like there's a conflict of interest. Wouldn't you think? Maybe. Also, I recommend that her community service should obviously be keeping deer out of flower beds because she seems to have a particular knack for that. Maybe she could help her whole neighborhood. All right, I'm Doug McBurney. I am out of here for this week. I want to thank my friends at KGov, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Theology Online. Go to any one of those websites and you will not be displeased. And thanks to my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.